Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. There's a national effort underway to deep six Columbus on Columbus Day in favor of honoring all explorers instead. We'll talk about that in just a couple of moments. But first, the name Casserly is well known, even iconic in this community, and now it has given new resonance. Gail Casserly is the ex-wife of the late Bob Casserly. She, with Bob, founded, and she was also executive director of, the City Museum, one of the most popular attractions downtown. It was just one of his many ventures and their adventures together. She has written a memoir which tells of their time together. While his story sometimes seems bigger than life, hers is also one of many moving parts, and she has written about it in her new memoir, Saltwater. Gail Casserly joins me in studio. Gail, so nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Don. I really appreciate having me. You're having me.
You know, we are so far away from any salt water that I know of. I'm a little perplexed by the title of your book.
Well, many people are. And salt water, basically, the title came from my maiden name, which was Salawada. And Polish people tend to pronounce it Soliwoda. And when we grew up, whether this is true or not, I'm not entirely sure, but we always believed that the translation of our name, Salawada, was salt water in Polish, Soli being salt and woda being water. People have said yes and no. I've asked a bunch of Polish friends, but basically we always considered ourselves the saltwater family. And my dad was always called Salty. So thus the title of the book. It seemed appropriate to go back to the source.
I'm guessing that's probably the first question you are asked in every interview you do about this book.
Well, it certainly comes up.
Well, what drove you, Gail, to write this book?
You know, I talk about it in the preface because I began this book in 2007 and basically had the whole book written by 2009. And I had no intention of ever writing in my life. I'm a sculptor. So this was not on my to-do list, to say the least. But I was in bed reading one night, and it just kind of, the idea just kind of fell out of the sky and hit me on the head. And I had kind of been in a funk in the studio and felt very uninspired in terms of my own work and sculpture. And it's not a comfortable place for an artist to be, as any artist will testify. So I was really kind of, and that often is the case before something creative comes about in your mind. You go through this kind of period of agony and sort of just discomfort. And so that's where I was, and this idea came. And, you know, it just took. And so from that very night on, I started writing. And it just evolved like another sculpture for me. It was really a thing of, it felt identical to being in the studio, except I was actually at the table writing with pen and paper most of the time. But the similarities were just amazing to me.
All of this happened before Bob's death.
Oh, well before, yes.
So
yes.
This was not written as a sense of catharsis
for
dealing with that and other issues that were going on.
No, not at all. And in fact, Bob knew that I was writing the book, and he knew that it was finished even, well before he died. Mm-hmm. And so this was a project long in the works and, you know, a very, just a very deep and engaging artistic creative process for myself.
I said in the introduction that your life has been one of many, many moving parts, mm-hmm. and it certainly has. I mean, you've traveled many different paths during the course of your life. Tell us about the early days and your attraction to the church.
Well, do you mean from the convent on?
Yeah.
Or that? Okay. Yeah. Well, when I left high school, I wound up joining a missionary group of nuns who worked only in Africa. And it just so happened that they had a training house not far from my home in Erie, Pennsylvania, where I grew up and went to school and such. But they came to the school one day to talk about their mission, and their job in the States was sort of to promote vocations. You know, this is back in the 60s. So they came, and I was like, it was love at first sight. I was just completely inspired, smitten, just gaga. I just fell in love with this group of women and their white habits and their singing and Swahili and beating on drums. And there I was, this little Polish girl in Erie, PA, thinking, wow, this is my way out, and this is where I'm going to go. you know, and where that calling came from, whether I say to myself, was it like a calling from, quote, God, or was it just pure infatuation? You know, I still to this day I'm not really sure. But in any event, I did wind up going off and joining this group of women, mostly a European group, with a mother house in Rome. And I joined and I spent 10 years of my life with them. So my whole decade from 19 to 29, I spent as a missionary. With 3 years of those years spent in Malawi, so I did get to Africa, but I had to go to college. They wound up sending me to college and doing all kinds of things that I really had no desire to do at the moment because I was just hot to trot to get to Africa.
Was art a part of your life at this point?
Well, I was one of those kids who everybody said, oh, she's the artist in the class, she's artistic, she's this and that. So I was always doing that kind of stuff growing up when I was little. And even when I was, 11, I won an art contest for drawing a portrait of my dad. So that was back, it ran through me like that. But I never thought of it really as something that I would go on to study or as a profession. I didn't feel secure enough or talented enough or able for various reasons. But when I joined the convent, ironically, it was this group of missionary sisters who decided to send me to college to study art because they sort of detected a talent there, obviously. And they actually believed that there was a need for that kind of education to go and teach in Africa. Which seems a little odd, but it all worked out. So they got me into actually studying it and leading to, really a professional career in art.
And you tell in your book of writing pictures, murals of some sort on village residences. I don't know if they were huts or exactly what they were, probably.
They were huts, yes.
Yeah. My daughter was in the Peace Corps in Africa, so I imagine it's probably a similar kind of similar kind of experience. So that was the first real outlet for your artistic talents.
Well, it was, and I wound up as a nun studying here at Fonfon University, then Fonfon College, and that is really when I became aware of kind of really the nuts and bolts of art and the whole background in art history and all of that sort of thing. And ironically, that's where I first met Bob Cassily. I was a nun at Fonfon. I was 23, and he was one of the first male students, soon to become the first male graduate at Fonfon. And he was, I guess he was 21. So we met way back when in very different circumstances. I was wearing a habit. I had a little veil on, and, and he was kind of big bad Bob,
How long after that meeting did you keep the veil and the habit?
Well, the congregation and the church at large was going through a lot of changes with the Ecumenical Council, and so the congregation changed their habit shortly after, and it wasn't long before nuns weren't wearing, habits at all, some with veils, some without, and so I became one of the ones to go without fairly quickly.
Well, what I'm getting at, Gail.
I miss the point?
Maybe I did. I put it badly. But actually, you kind of left that life for a different kind of life.
Oh, yeah. I got it now. Yeah. Okay. well, it was when I graduated in Fonfon with my undergraduate degree, I guess it was in 73, and then I went off to Africa right away. So and I was back in 76 or right around that time. And it just so happened that Bob happened to be back in St. Louis at that point in time, and we both happened to gravitate back to the Fonfon studios, the sculpture studios, where people tended to hang out, and we started to use the studio. So it was at that point in my life where I met him again under different circumstances for the second time.
And that changed your life?
It certainly did. Yeah, it certainly did.
Well, you talk about, in the book, you talk about a tumultuous life at times. You talk about crushing sorrows and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. My point is that you get very, very personal about a lot of things in the book. How difficult is that for you to do, to sit down and write about things that are so deeply personal?
Well, it's the kind of thing if I would have thought it all the way through— I might not have done it. But it's again, it was like a sculpture evolving. And sometimes you do things that are costly or are questionable or are risky or daring, et cetera. And as I got into writing the story, the whole story, it just started to come to such a state of truth for me and rightness that it would have been impossible not to say the hard things along with the beautiful things. And so it just wouldn't have worked. And so you just do it. And I just did it. Strangely enough, it wasn't that hard by the time I had gotten to those sections, because I had just gotten to that point of knowing that there was no question about what had to come next. It just had to be told in a certain way. And in writing it, it was almost like I was not writing about myself. I was writing about a little girl who was sitting next to me and telling me the experiences of her life. And I kind of put all those puzzle pieces of her existence together in a way that seemed to be truthful and honest and revealing and compelling. And so it's actually the aftermath now, having it in print, that that I've started to think about, oh, my gosh, what have I done, you know? But it's it just had to be done that way.
You know, people will read the book and they'll be looking for certain kinds of things when they realize that you have been so honest and personal about it. That doesn't bother you now so much. Yet.
No, you know, it's the old saying, my life is now an open book. And it's – no, there's nothing that – you know, I don't know. It's sounds silly to say, but it's kind of the price of art. It's no, I'm not bothered by it. Maybe 10, 15 years ago I would have been, but at this point in my life I'm not. I feel very comfortable with the story. I feel that it's life, you know. There's nothing in there that people won't identify with and gravitate towards and understand it. It's just life.
Family reaction to it so far?
Well, my mother passed away in 2011, and she was suffering from dementia, so she actually never did get to participate in it, which, in fact, made it easier for me. Not that she passed away, but no, that I didn't sort of have to get her blessing on the project. My sister, who still lives in Erie, Pennsylvania, was very helpful and encouraging to me and just, you know, gave me her support, as did my brother. Nobody had any qualms. And there, you know, I tested this out on several people who have known me through my life, and everybody just, you know, gave me a thumbs up and keep going with it.
Well, it's relatively new. It's just out, as a matter of fact. I want folks to know once again the name of it is Saltwater, and it is a memoir by Gail Cassily. We'll be back to continue our conversation with Gail. If you'd like to say hi to her, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. You can also reach us through Facebook. Back to continue our conversation with Gail Cassily in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation with Gail Cassily. We're talking about her new book, Saltwater. It's a memoir. It's telling all of us about her life from the early days in Erie, Pennsylvania, to her time here in St. Louis and her marriage to Bob Cassily. Bob Cassily, well known to many St. Louisans for his many good works here in the community. Do you ever feel like you're overshadowed by Bob Cassily?
Well, I mean, I was always overshadowed by Bob Cassily, but I can honestly say that never bothered me, because I sort of knew his nature and knew what his need was, and our needs were not the same. I didn't need that kind of exposure, or I didn't need that kind of scale of grandiose endeavors, and he did, you know, and I always knew that, and I was always really happy to support him. And so we had a very, very functional partnership and relationship, and the sense of I was behind the scenes and he was always the front. And so, you know, and Bob had still hard to say, Bob had tremendous talent, and, you know, he deserved all the exposure that he received.
I think one of the things the book will do for you is to make people realize how underappreciated you were for what you did, because you were kind of second banana and didn't seek the limelight the way he did.
Well, I don't think about it like that. I honestly don't, and I certainly, it's certainly not a reaction I'm looking for from the book. I mean, quite frankly, I'd like people to sort of just appreciate the writing and the way the whole book is composed more than anything, any of the facts or any of the pieces of the story. So it's not at all about telling anybody what my role was, because in that whole endeavor, I was very proud and happy about my role. I mean, and I knew the significance of it, and I knew the significance of my role in helping to feed his role into getting to a sense of fulfillment and success. So that really was my success.
Was the City Museum the crowning achievement?
For
both of you.
Certainly, yes, it was. Yeah, I think it took things to a level that Bob had aspired to, and we had discussed, and we had, you know, thought about over the years how to get him to a point where he could make something so significant like that, and so that became that point, and there were a lot of steps along the way that got us there, as the book details. But you know, in my opinion, what he was doing at Cementland, I think, was going to far outshine City Museum.
Folks may not quite get that reference to Cementland. Mm-hmm. Most of us, I think, probably know that that's where he lost his life. But what was Cementland? He spent a lot of time there. Why?
Bob had been working there, you know, steadily, I believe, for the last 10 years, if not more. And, in fact, he purchased the property when we were still married. So it's been, you know, he had it for a long time. And Cementland, I don't really know all the specifics of what he was doing there. But, you know, it was an old cement industrial site. And he took it over, I think it's like 47 acres or something like that. But I might be wrong on that number. And anyway, like I said, he had been working persistently for the last 10 years just building this phenomenal kind of land sculpture piece that it was a time where industry and the cement manufacturing plant kind of went in there and took over nature, you know, stripped the trees and did everything it had to do to build what it had to build. And now nature was kind of eating back industry. And, you know, he's got some of the old remnants of the buildings that are being swallowed up by mounds of dirt. And there's canals and waterways and bridges and silos that you can go up to, and everything interconnects. And I mean, it's a very, very sophisticated theme, and just really brilliant in terms of its scope and what he was doing with it. So, yeah.
What was there? Just getting back to the City Museum for a moment, was there a eureka moment in which he and you, the two of you together, said, "This is what we're going to do," or was it kind of an evolution?
No, there was never a eureka moment, or I should say every moment was a eureka moment. Let's put it that way. That's far more correct. And then, you know, the next day there was another eureka moment. So that's the way it went, and that's kind of still the way it's going.
Yeah. We have some people that want to get into this conversation, and before time gets away from us, let's bring them in. I'll start with Marie. Marie, thank you so much for waiting. You're on the air with Gail Cassily.
Yes, Gail. Thank you so much for writing a memoir. I am coming to find, as an adult woman, I have a similar story that you have. I don't think my story is interesting to write. However, my husband's story, I find, is phenomenally interesting, and is so vital. I don't want them to be lost. How do I encourage my husband, who, like yourself, being an artist, to write? He's a scientist and finds his story unnecessary, but his family goes way back to the Mayflower, and I really think that he needs to write. How do I encourage him to do what you have done? Thank you.
Thank you. You know, I think all you can do is encourage him, but in terms of the writing, I think, I mean, it is such a personal process and certainly a laborious one, and probably until he's ready to take that on himself, he's probably not going to do it. But I would certainly encourage him and, you know, tell him the value of it. And he can read Saltwater, perhaps, and maybe get an inspiration from that. But it's very personal, so he'll have to be up to it when he decides that he is.
Thank you so much from my heart of hearts for writing it, and I look forward to reading it. God bless you.
Thank you.
It's not an easy process. Writing a book it requires a great deal of discipline and mm-hmm. self-control, and it's not an easy deal, is it?
No, it's. And when I've talked about it, I said, you know, writing a memoir is not for the faint of heart. Mm-hmm. It really isn't. And even from an emotional perspective, because you have to think back so far, and you have to dust off layers of memories and analyze them and figure out how they piece together. And no, it's a lot of work. A lot of work.
You know, don't misunderstand this question, please. But some people might think it presumptuous to write a memoir. Mm-hmm. Like, who cares?
You know? Oh, I know exactly. And in fact, when I was doing it, I was so uncomfortable about the notion that it was a memoir. And I would just kind of, somebody would say, well, what are you writing? I'd say, well, this is a book, you know. And I couldn't even say it because it was like, well, who are you to think that anybody cares about your life? And da, da, da. But, you know, unfortunately, that's what this kind of writing is titled. Mm-hmm. and the story I had to tell happens to be mine. So, if that's what they call memoir, well, then I guess I just have to call it a memoir.
It's also a very popular genre these days.
Yes.
I mean, there's a
yes.
lot of them being written, and
right.
obviously there's a lot of interest in it as well.
Yeah.
If you meet interesting people and do interesting things, other people are likely to be mm-hmm. interested. Let's take another call. Mark will join us from University City. Mark, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Gail, I am really, really looking forward to reading this book. I have to say I have great appreciation for you and your husband. I was blessed to actually work for you guys back in the early 90s, and that helped me cultivate my living, basically, what I've went on to accomplish. I became a certified chef, and I've been 11 years as a construction materials inspector specializing in concrete. And I always wanted to thank you for that, and I really, really am looking forward to the read.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's nice to hear family back in the scene again, and I'm happy for your success, and certainly happy to have contributed to that in any tiny way whatsoever. So good luck to you.
Thank you, Gail.
I imagine you're going to be hearing a lot of things like that as more and more people become familiar with salt water. You've touched a lot of lives. You and your husband touched a great many lives in a very positive way. That has to be gratifying. Mm-hmm.
We have, the artist community is a kind of a funny, funky family community, and, people just, it's a big extended family, and there's been a lot of that, and a lot of learning, and a lot of growth, and a lot of fun, and a lot of pain, and so we have.
Are you still active as an artist, as a sculptor?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things you can't kind of put down, but I certainly, in a sense, put it down when I was writing, but like I mentioned before, for me it was the very same process, mm-hmm. and in fact the book talks about the similarities between my work in the studio and this book.
Let's take another phone call. This time it's going to be Kate calling from St. Louis. Kate, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Oh, good. So glad to talk to Gail again, and I'm really looking forward to reading the book. You and I have only had sort of a nodding acquaintance, but I was involved with the spinning and the weaving that you did at the City Museum. And I think you should tell people that you used to bring in a herd of sheep and have the sheepdog herd the sheep and then shear them. And we wove a hair shirt one time.
I remember.
Haircut.
I remember all of that. Yes, we did have. We had an event called Sheep in the City one time, and we brought a bunch of sheep into the City Museum, and they were dyed with Kool-Aid. So we had pink sheep and blue sheep, Bob and I still have a farm out in Dittmer, Missouri, and for many years, 18 years, in fact, I raised sheep out there, and birthed and lambed and did all of that kind of stuff. So. We would often bring the sheep and travel around with them, and I learned how to spin, and actually Bob had learned how to spin as well. So,
set up, and I used to go down there on Sunday, and they would just let us come in with our spinning wheels and sit, and the kids would come running up to these looms, and they were so absorbed, and I thought, oh, I've got to get into this. My nieces lost their father when they were very young, and I bought a big loom, and I used to sit in the basement and weave, and they would sit there and just tell me their problems. And, and I really have to thank you for that, because I got involved with so many interesting people, and I've gone on with it. I'm sitting here with my sock machine right now making socks for soldiers that we mail overseas. So it's turned into, I'm a nurse, you know, so I need to let that out once in a while and do something totally different. And this has really, really enriched my life, and I really want to thank you.
Well, thank you, and it's wonderful to hear how something like that has affected you and given you satisfaction. So thank you so much.
Kate? Well, I try to give back with it, too. So I try to do what you did. You taught me a lesson with it, too, that
it's so therapeutic
to other people to learn.
Thank you.
Kate, thank you so much for the call. How long were you and Bob married?
Well, we were together a total of almost 20 years. I guess it was 18 that we were married.
When Kate tells the story of the sheep and the spinning and all the rest of it, it seems like there was nothing that you guys wouldn't try down there. I mean, it was just so kind of off the wall in many ways. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that came up that you just said, no, we can't possibly pull this off?
No, I can't think of anything. It was pretty much always the reverse as far as I was concerned. It was like, oh, my God, can we pull this off? And but inevitably, one way or other, you know, and I want to say that, you know, there were so many other people involved in the City Museum project. It wasn't just Bob and myself. You know, Bob had, we had a crew of tremendous people who worked with us, and there were contributors and donors and, you know, and certainly the audience. So it's really a venture made of many people.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that they appreciate getting credit for the work that they put in. How many people at any given time are employed down there?
Oh, you know, I don't know really right now, but, you know, I'm guessing something like 50 or something like that. Maybe 100. I can't say really.
Getting back to the book, what was the toughest part of it for you to write and deal with?
Well, let's see. How honest should I get here?
Oh, come on. Let it all hang out. Yeah.
Well, I had a the part about drinking certainly was a hard part to write when I battled alcoholism. And that, you know, was probably one part that I wished I didn't even have to venture into. And, of course, here I am saying it on the radio. So, but, you know, again, like I said, it's a price of honesty. And, you know, it made me a better person to face it and to deal with it. And, you know, it's probably one of my greatest accomplishments, frankly.
And the easiest to write about?
Oh, you know, writing about my children and adopting the kids and just how excited we both were to have them and the things, funny things we did together with them. And, you know, Max and Daisy are my children. And, you know, I loved recalling that kind of story. And I loved paying tribute to my parents as well, and certainly my dad, who, you know, was a victim to a very tragic accident in his life. So there were just many things that were special to write about.
As was your son, Max.
Yes.
And it wasn't an accident, but we'll leave that for people to read the book to learn that part of the story. I'll take one more call before we have to say goodbye to Gail. And Andy in South St. Louis, go ahead. You're on the air.
I guess I'd like to start by confessing that a few of my friends and I used to sneak into Cementland while it was still being built and explore all the buildings and everything. And
we're tracing the call right now, Andy.
Do what?
We're tracing the call right now.
Yeah, well, while I was out of town, actually, my girlfriend used to still go there, and she brought a couple of our friends there one time, and she happened to run into Bob, who was working on it, while they were there. And at first he was like, he was kind of angry and was telling them that they needed to leave and everything. And my friends are all art students at Webster. And once they explained to him that they just went there to appreciate it and view it and explore it, and they thought it was so cool, he was just very appreciative of them coming there to see its beauty. And apparently they just sat and talked about art for a little while, and he didn't even make them leave. He just told them to be safe. So I just thought I'd share that little story with you.
Thank you. That sounds about right. Bob could turn on a dime.
All of that, too, is included in the book. Once again, the name of the book is Saltwater. My guest is Gail Cassily. This is a memoir, and it is available now at all the places where good books are sold. And, by the way, we have to mention that in the coming weeks, Gail is going to be appearing at a number of different venues to talk about this book and have more extended conversations than we've had here. There are a number of places. They are all listed on our website at stlpublicradio.org. So if you'd like to meet Gail in person, go to the website and find out where she's going to be. Gail, thank you so much for being with us. It's a great pleasure meeting you, and best of success with the book.
Thank you, Don. It's a great being here. Thank you so much.
It's a great story. I'm glad you told it.
Thank you.
That's Gail Cassily. Coming up, taking Columbus out of Columbus Day. Well, sort of. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.